Welcome to the Philharmonia Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:29 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 28th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Let me first apologise for recording the audio so early, but I've got to run to catch a flight, and David isn't in today. Today has been a relatively soft day for stock markets generally, and it is at a rather interesting juncture, or we're at a rather interesting juncture for a number of these stock markets, because something we talk about at the chart seminar is roundophobia, and that is part and parcel of a discussion on psychological levels. And when one looks at just a number of indices, you have the Dow Jones touched the 12,000 level this week. The S&P was close to 1,300. The FTSE in the UK is close to 6,000. The DAX is just above 7,000. The CAC in France is just above 4,000. So there's a number of these indices are within very close proximity of big round numbers for a number of them, and a number of these developed markets have really done extraordinarily well over the last 7 or 8 weeks. So they've become a little bit overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages, and they've at least paused over the last 10 days or so. A number of markets that did especially well in 2010 have had a more pronounced reversion to their means, and certainly chief among those have been markets in the ASEAN region. The Indonesian market in particular, which was both a leader on the upside and one that lost momentum early, has now reverted to its mean, almost completely unwinding that overbought condition. And we're now back into an area where it could potentially find support. An important aspect to looking at moving averages is really, in our opinion, is not to be too dogmatic about the absolute level, because it's in the nature of markets to overshoot, and there's no hard and fast law that says that markets have to find support at exactly the 200-day moving average, and they often tend to overshoot, and every now and again they do tend to push around or range or become a little bit more volatile in the region of the 200-day moving average. So what we're looking for is for markets, if medium-term uptrends are to remain relatively consistent, is that markets find support in the region of those 200-day moving averages. And we've had a number of those ASEAN markets pulling right back to the 200-day moving average, closing that overbought condition, and they're now into an area where they may begin to find support. While Indonesia, the Philippines, Malaysia have all pulled back to one extent or another, and perhaps Indonesia has had the most developed of those reversions to the mean, the Indian market, where the perception of governance has deteriorated really quite considerably over the last few weeks, has been noteworthy because of its weakness. And the Indian market was weak again in here today. So that has not found support in the region of its 200-day moving average, and it's pushing the banks index, which had led on the upside and topped out early, is now coming back to test the previous high, and that's the next area of potential support. This market environment is very much being driven by the deterioration in sentiment and the view that the Indian government hasn't got the inflationary problem under control at all. And they've had to raise interest rates, and the market certainly hasn't liked that. And they have had a very haphazard attitude to getting the needed supplies of particularly food commodities out to the people that need them. And that's following what was a reasonably good monsoon season. So particularly, I'm sure, in the eyes of India's citizens, they don't have a lot of excuse for this inflationary problem in the food sector. That is Something that will have to change over time if the medium-term uptrend is going to remain relatively consistent. And when one looks at that Indian market, particularly the Sensex or the Nifty, it had gone right up to test its prior high, and it's now pulled back from that area. And clear upward dynamics and breaks of the short-term progressions of lower rally highs will be needed to indicate that the demand side is regaining confidence in here. India is an exception right now because while a number of other markets have pulled back, they haven't really dropped below their 200-day moving average, and they haven't shown the same sort of downward dynamics in that area that India has. But we remain in a corrective phase generally, particularly for those markets that did so phenomenally well in 2010, and I've listed a number of those. Certainly, the Thai market should also be listed in there. And the other side of that coin is that there are a number of markets, frontier markets such as Vietnam, and comparatively larger cap markets in the Asian region that really didn't do very much at all in 2010. And they've moved to a position of relative performance and indeed absolute performance. In the last few months, and among those, Taiwan is the clear leader, and that is benefiting both from its leverage to the growth of the Chinese consumer market and also its leverage to the global technology markets. Now, the Israeli market and the Nasdaq have both done phenomenally well of late and have become somewhat overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. The Nasdaq composite was at 2,750 yesterday, and it's down about 1.25% in here today. Personally, I'm not looking for anything more than a mean reversion, but it looks increasingly likely that we are going to have some form of reversion towards the mean. Now, a reversionary process can take two different shapes. It's either going to range in a very tight formation and allow that moving average to catch up, or we're going to have a sharp pullback towards the MA support found, and then it gradually makes its way back up towards the highs, or it could be something in between. But considering the fact that so many of these indices have become overextended, it's a mathematical fact that they will revert to their mean at some point. And the reality is that we've had such a fantastic run over the last 8 weeks that it's not so surprising that we are now starting to move into something a bit more of a corrective phase for stock markets. And when we look at some of the other asset classes, gold has also pulled back sharply. So if one spreads out and looks at risk assets generally, the industrial metal complex had pulled back sharply, but a number of them have found support, and tin in particular has pushed on to new high ground in emphatic fashion this week. Copper has also held the majority of its gains. It's currently sitting at 438 cents, and the recent high is just above 450 cents. So again, that is one that has found that has held on to the majority of its gain, and aluminium, nickel, zinc have all rallied in here. So while they have pulled back, some of those industrial metals pulled back sharply, such as zinc and lead, but they are also finding support in here. In the precious metal sector, gold had quite a weak day yesterday, but it's up $13 in here today. So we are getting some two-way action in the gold market, and gold has almost completely unwound its overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Silver probably has a bit more work to do in that regard. Palladium remains a sector leader and has held on to the vast majority of its gains. It's lost momentum somewhat, but it continues to hold that short-term progression of higher reaction lows and continues to hold above the $800 level. And platinum, which has been a laggard because it isn't particularly overextended by any real measure, it hasn't pulled back by very much either, and is continuing to hold above $1,800 and has been holding around that level for much of the last month. So platinum and palladium remain where the relative strength is in the precious metal markets, and gold shares in sympathy with the gold price have pulled back rather sharply. And they're another sector that have completely closed their overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. And they're back into an area where they could begin to find support. So, to the extent that we were looking at a number of risk assets to move into a corrective phase and to unwind overbought conditions that had developed by last November, a certain amount of that has already been completed, and what we're now looking for is evidence that they're finding support and that demand is starting to return. A number of those risk assets had, particularly in the Asian region, the emerging markets, and in some of the industrial and precious metal commodities, had become overextended by last November and have already reverted to their means. So in those sectors, we're looking for them to find support. But elsewhere, in more developed markets, they have done so phenomenally well over the last 3 months, where they picked up relative strength and leadership from the ones that had done so much better in 2010. They are now at much more likely to move into this reversionary type process, and that is looking like an increasing likelihood. What we continue to see is that the soft commodity sector, and it has been phenomenally strong over the last week, is where the focus of speculation is currently residing. Food commodities have benefited both from the increased demand by the expansion of the global middle class, reduced supply because of the inclement weather that has plagued a number of countries over the last 18 months, and prices have responded accordingly. So, wheat, which was an early leader, formed a first step above the base and has now rallied back up to test its August highs. It's currently at 845 cents. Soybeans is up 12 today, corn is up just over 5, and they're all in medium-term uptrends. Sugar is close to its high. Coffee is, if not making new highs today, very close to its highs. Cotton remains a tower of strength. Rubber is hitting 30-year new highs. And the commonality across the agricultural sector is really quite astounding. So, regardless of exchanges or countries, interest in agricultural commodities has increased considerably. And it's increased to such an extent that we've seen a large number of commodities now breaking 30-year inflation-adjusted downtrends. We've got a large number of inflation-adjusted charts in the chart library. You can go in there, look at lots of back history, and you'll see that there is a large number of agricultural commodities have broken 30-year downtrends when we adjust them for inflation. So while a number of them are hitting nominal new highs or highs that haven't been seen in at least 30 years, in inflation-adjusted terms, they're pretty small advances relative to the kinds of massive inflationary pressures stemming from the commodity complex that were present in the 1970s. So there is potential for these commodity prices to go substantially higher. At the moment, you have, particularly in the population centers of the world, such as India and China, Indonesia, a good part of the Middle East and Brazil, you have population growth is no longer keeping pace with economic growth. And that's helping to increase the numbers of people in the middle classes. And those people are, they aspire to the standard of living that a good many people who will be listening to this audio take for granted. And they are rapidly progressing in terms of both their aspirations and their purchasing power. So demand for basic foodstuffs continues to increase, and prices have not quite risen yet to a level that encourages Western farmers, particularly in the US and in the EU, to massively increase supply. I think it's easy to forget that with the latest GATT talks a couple of years ago, that the EU agreed to rationalize its farming industry and scale back the common agricultural policy and the subsidies that it provides really quite considerably. And it's, I suspect, no mistake that the scaling back of agricultural production in Europe has corresponded with a massive amount of supply being withdrawn from the market, and that's helped to support prices. And obviously, prices have not risen yet to an extent that European farmers have been encouraged to actually set aside the types of subsidies that they're getting now, which encourage them not to produce anything at all and to actually get back to the business of what farmers should actually be doing. So it would be a wrong conclusion to say that the world isn't capable of producing enough food for its people. It is. But what we have at the moment is a regulatory framework for global agriculture that is simply dysfunctional. And as long as that remains the case, that is going to put upward pressure on food commodities generally. And while over the last few weeks we've been talking about the CFTC looking at speculative interest and speculative activity in the commodities sector, and that certainly could have a negative effect on speculative interest in those commodities in the short term, because you have the increased demand from the global middle class and the lack of joined up thinking in regard to the supply side of the equation, that and the fact that we've seen these prices breaking out of 30-year inflation adjusted downtrends, it does suggest that we're into an environment where higher food prices will be the norm. We've seen so many of these agricultural commodities breaking out of long-term downtrends or long-term bases. And we refer to those long-term bases where something has been going sideways completely inactive in the doldrums for decades. We refer to those as sleepers. And the agricultural commodities fit into that category without any difficulty whatsoever. We are currently in the midst of the greatest urbanization in history, and that's changing the way the global economy is weighted. And the centers of population are increasingly the centers of growth for the global economy. There are most of the fuller money long-term themes are driven by that one super cycle theme of urbanization, because it is urbanization where you have hundreds of millions of people moving from an agrarian lifestyle into an urban environment that is helping to drive demand for infrastructure, not just in China, but just about everywhere else as well. And that's helping to support bull markets in just about all industrial commodities. Because we have an increasing number of people in the middle classes, they have a higher demand for food, and their per capita consumption of just about all commodities is increasing. But also, their per capita consumption of services such as healthcare and banking are also increasing at a prodigious rate. So that is where the growth for consumer goods is likely to come from for decades to come. There will be myriad ways in which to play that theme. But perhaps the most important is to recognize that that is going to be the dominant theme for years to come, and to look for asset classes that give leverage to that theme, because that's where the big fortunes will be made. So the USA and Europe is replete with companies that have a global franchise, that dominate their niche, have pricing power, and are leveraged to growth in the global economy. And those are the companies that are going to do best, are most likely to do best in the coming decades. The global recession, or the Great Recession that has affected the USA and particularly the periphery of Europe over the last couple of years is likely to lead into a slow growth environment for the most affected countries for a considerable period. And the companies that have done best have been those that are leveraged to global growth. Certainly, the ones that are leveraged to the growth of domestic economy have had a very difficult time. And even though the economies of these countries have probably bottomed and are probably on a recovery trajectory, they're unlikely to outpace the potential for hundreds of millions, if not billions, of new consumers to dominate demand for consumer goods and commodities for and indeed services for decades to come. Against the background of the massive debt problems that continue to be present in the USA and in much of Europe, the normal response of governments is quite simply to attempt to inflate their debts away. And we have moved from a 30-year bull market in US treasuries, which was a disinflationary environment, to an environment where the velocity of money in the USA peaked in 1997. So that means that the speed with which capital is moving around the US economy has been deteriorating for 14 years. And in order to keep the economy afloat, the supply of money has increased to compensate for that fall off in the velocity of money. But at some point, the velocity of money will stop or at least slow down. And at that point, central bankers run the very real risk of keeping excess monetary supply in the system for longer than it is absolutely required. And that's where your inflationary pressures are really going to start to kick in. At the moment, we've seen that inflation has become something of an issue for the USA and in Europe, but nowhere near as much as it has for higher growth economies in Asia and Latin America. What we have seen, though, is that because the stated aim of central banks is to encourage inflation, that people are starting to lose faith in the fiat currencies that they're holding. And they're looking at trying to invest in something that has a real physical value. And that's what's helped to drive the bull market for precious metals over the last 10 years. And while gold has been in a corrective phase for the last couple of months, this does not look like a signal that the secular bull market for gold is over. And that continues to look like it has got further to run. And given the fact that we've seen gold pull back towards its 200-day moving average, that also suggests that we're coming back to the next reasonable buying opportunity. And when there's evidence that it has found support, then we'll be in a much better position to say that that is a that this corrective phase has actually ended. We remain within a bull market environment for the vast majority of risk assets. Monetary policy, particularly in the USA and in Europe, remains accommodative. Now, it's unlikely to get very much more accommodative, but at the same time, we are probably still quite a long way from the next recession. And if that is the case, then these markets have got a good couple of years left to run before they run into any kind of serious trouble. And the corollary is that reversions to the mean are likely to continue to be reasonable buying opportunities for at least the medium term. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but wish all the best to all of you.